Blog Talk Radio.
Okay, Doc. And of course, that was the wonderful Dr. John, who passed away in June. This is Carl's Cavern, and we're doing an in memoriam today. I'm joined, of course, by my wonderful producer, Doc. Say hello, Doc.
Good evening, everybody.
And our special guest tonight is Stephen Ronquillo, Wildside Radio, good friend, and glad you could join us, Stephen.
Thanks.
Man, oh, you're welcome.
That song was so long that I had time to walk the town and back before it was over.
Yeah, but didn't you walk with a nice little step and and sort of jiggled along. I mean, it's a great song. And I can't think of a better song to really appreciate, you know, someone like Dr. John. I mean, I could have done I walk on Gilded Splitters, and it would have been 10 minutes. But, of course, Dr. John passed away in mid-June, and I was in the middle of our LGBTQ series, so we weren't able to really get something together for him. But he's someone that I was introduced to in the early 70s. And the first album I heard was Gree Gree. And I'd always loved New Orleans music. And when I was very young, we visited, and it was just wonderful hearing all that music. So to have him pass away, and that, it's a great loss. So what are your thoughts on Dr. John, Mr. Stephen?
Dr. John was the one who brought New Orleans music to the forefront. And when I say New Orleans, I mean darker music with the gree-gree, the voodoo, and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, there were people before him, of course, Professor Longhair and James Booker, but he really crossed over into the pop area with same right time, same place. I think I got that one wrong.
Right place, wrong time. I was in the right place,
okay.
But it was wrong time.
Wrong time. Okay, sorry, I got that one screwed up. I'm tired too. What can I tell you?
Don't worry.
But he also, I want to tell this quick story about Dr. John. I had a very, very close friend of mine who was handicapped, and we went to a concert up in Niagara Falls at Melody Fair. And I had asked for seating for him, but they didn't have any, and I bitched and moaned when they finally got us seated. And at the first intermission, they came to us and said, come backstage. So B.B. King was there, and he was Kenny was just in awe of B.B. King and got pictures with him and that. And I'm just sitting down, hanging out and that, and all of a sudden, you know, someone sits next to me, and I look, and it's fucking Dr. Jod. And he looks at my fingers. He says, you must be an ivory player. You must play the ivories. And we talked for about 10 minutes, and it was so cool. So I actually did get to meet him, and I've loved his music forever and ever and ever. And so just wanted to start off with Dr. John. Doc, I just wanted to ask you a quick question. You set up the music and you listened to it. What do you think of Dr. John?
I'm actually familiar with that song and the Right Place, Wrong Time. I mixed that up too myself. But I'm familiar with those two songs, and I find them very entertaining. The moment I heard the first several notes from when I pulled this song, I was like, yep, this is a good one. So, I mean, I'm not very familiar with the rest of his music, but the song that we played tonight, I've heard many, many times.
Okay.
I do like Zydeco, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Well, New Orleans music is just fantastic. It really is. And for those that don't know him, you know, I would recommend very highly to check him out. And so that we're going to start with him. But we also have someone who's very special that we want to talk about that really wasn't covered too much in the in all the memoriams and the obits that we saw in the last couple weeks. And, Stephen, I'm going to kick this one over to you so you can start this one. You know exactly who I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah. Okay, we're going to start with this Mexican company that was doing these series of Tarzan's ripoffs. And I forget the name of them, but there was something like Tars or something like that. They cut the name.
It was Zan. It was Zan.
Yeah, Zan. And they had this guy from America called Steve Hawks. And he basically played Tarzan in them until he had a very serious, nasty accident that left burns over 30-40% of his body and left him stranded down in Florida while the rest of the crew just went to the next job. And Stephen Hawks found himself stuck in Florida with a crap load of hospital bills and no way to pay them. So he found Jesus, and he decided to make a Christian movie. And how did that turn out, Carl?
Well, it's very interesting. He hooked up with a guy by the name of Brad Grittner on some Nudie Cuties and some exploitation films, and they came up with this movie. And before we say the name of the movie, I need to say this first, that this movie changed my life in so many ways. Not only did I see it at the drive-in, but it's the reason, it really is the reason that I got started in podcasting. And I want to kick that back to you, Stephen. And you could tell the story of how that happened.
First, Carl, who was the man who, one, helped Brad and Steve get the locations out and gave them a film crew to work with?
That would be William Graffay.
Yeah.
Who was on your show, and I was very, very lucky to co-host that show. And he's wonderful. Love Mr. Graffay.
But yeah, this, it holds a record because it's the only first Christian movie, I'm not saying the rest because I'm going to let Carl have that, to get an X rating.
Yeah.
And Doc's in it too. This movie earns its X rating, doesn't it, Doc?
Well, I guess Doc is doing something else right now.
No, sorry about that. Yeah, it sure does, because it's got gore, violence, slight nudity, and lots of gravy jokes.
And drug use.
Or giblets, I should say.
But so anyway, the name of the movie is Blood Creek. And Steve Hawks plays the lead character, Herschel. And it is the only pro-Christian, anti-drug, mutated turkey monster movie in existence, wherein the narrator, who is telling you how bad drugs are, is chain smoking and going into a coughing fit. And I'm not joking. Am I joking?
No, I think it's pretty close to emphysema.
Whatever. Jesus, good God. But seriously, tell them the story about how we met and suddenly you were going to do this watch.
Well, it was a thing. I noticed almost every holiday had their own bad movie. Christmas, well, crap. There's a crap load of bad Christmas movies. And Halloween, well, it's got its share. Fourth of July has Uncle Sam.
Mm-hmm.
Labor Day or Memorial Day has Memorial Day Massacre, but there's only one I know that was pretty much set at Thanksgiving that's not Jake, Body by Jake, stabbing PCP in his tongue and killing people for no reason, and that would be Blood Freak. And I was like, I want to do Blood Freak for Thanksgiving, and I asked if anyone wanted to be in it. First, I got, well, Doc, have you ever heard of Donnie Dunning?
Yes, I have.
She's the first one to say yes. And then Carl jumped in. and that's
it wasn't
how
that. I just kept
it.
I said, I have to do this. You don't understand, Stephen.
No.
I must do this.
Yeah. Oh, and counting your shows, I counted it up. And I got coming up. You guys have pretty much almost done 400 podcasts.
Good God.
Wow.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
But, yeah, we've done it three times. I think once is a gag. The first time with Donna in there. And then the third time with Doc.
Right.
Oh, yes. And I made a giblets joke that pretty much killed everybody for about a good minute from laughter.
Yes.
I remember that. So that was great.
But you know, the thing is, I had seen this movie. It was like the second weekend I worked at the drive-in, and it was one of three movies. And it was just like, what the fuck is this? And I just fell in love with it. And the thing is, Steve Hawks, this was his baby. And as the one thing about what, you know, if you ever get into a good, bad movie, what makes a good, bad movie is passion. Even if it's displaced. And this has so much passion in it. You know, definitely displaced. But damn, it's so entertaining. And what's interesting about Steve Hawks is not only that he was in this movie, but what also he did. So I'm going to kick that back to you, Stephen.
Oh, he opened up an animal preserve in Florida where he had lions and other exotic animals. And it was in the OOs when he got busted. They said for animal cruelty and stuff. He got all the charges reversed.
Yeah, but they made him shut. Didn't they make him at least shut down partially the reserve? Or was he able to reopen? Yeah, okay.
He was able to reopen it.
And there was also a tiger that escaped, too.
Well, that's all part of it.
Of a tiger.
Yeah. Right. You know, so, for Steve Hawks, who really didn't get much coverage. I think the only one I saw was Bloody Disgusting, and we got to remember Steve Hawks, because to me, he's the reason. That movie is the reason I'm podcasting. Okay, and I owe that movie and Steve Hawks this part of my career, and for that I will always be grateful to the man.
And I gotta be of credit where credit's due. The guy behind Psychotronic Cinema, Michael
Weldon.
Weldon. The Bloody Disgusting post, the post I sent to you, and the post that I put up was the only post that was up. Anyone who wrote about it used that. So
yeah.
There was no at all.
And that's a shame. That's a real shame. I mean, these people that we're going to mention tonight, they all have careers and that. But even someone like Steve, who might be a very minor figure, had a major effect on people. And to me, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing tonight if it weren't for Steve Hawks. Period.
I'd rather watch Blood Freaks than The Room.
Oh, easily. Easily.
Or Saving Christmas.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Easily. Okay. So we're going to move on from here. And I think the next person we're going to mention, let's mention the big one here. Someone who I love as an actor. Someone who was acting for well over six decades. But to most people, he's only known for one or two roles. One would be, of course, Artie the producer, and that's what they all led with, the obits. And the other one would be Zed from Men in Black, the first two films. And that would be the actor Rip Torn. Now, Doc, just very quickly, what do you know Rip from other than that? Do you know anything else from him?
No, my familiarity with him was definitely from Men in Black 1 and 2. I know I've seen him in different movies when I was a kid, but I can't for the life of me remember which ones. But I really like how he always plays a character that's got a little bit of a psychotic edge to them, or something that makes you go, ooh, yeah.
A little?
That gentleman.
We'll
that
get
gentleman
into that. Trying... But take it.
Okay, wait.
Take it, Steve.
Doc, right now, my man Carl talking a little bit, go to YouTube and watch and type in Maidstone Fight and watch that, then get back to us.
I've seen that. It's nuts. He's completely bonkers.
Yeah.
All right, Steve, I'm kicking this one to you first.
Okay, to sum it up, there's a saying. When Rip Torn pulled the fork out on Dennis Hopper, Dennis Hopper got terrified and fired Rip Torn. When Rip Torn got a hammer and tried to kill Norman Mailer bit a chunk out of his damn ear and gave it back to him.
Yep. He, you know, there. I tell you, someone else, the fights were legendary too. Is when Rip, one of his few directorial credits, he did a film called The Telephone with Whoopi Goldberg, and they went at each other too.
But for most people that love their movies, especially those that love the 70s, his best film came between Easy Rider and Maidstone. And it's one of, and it's basically, well, it is Carl's favorite movie of his.
Oh, without a doubt. Okay, so what we got here, you know, he was in a lot of stuff in the 50s and so on and so forth. And then you know, he lots of TV series. He was in Alfred Hitchcock. It was Judas and King of Kings was his first real thing. He was also in Sweet Bird of Youth. And this is all in the 60s, early 60s. But it wasn't really until the 70s that, you know, in the late 60s. So one of his first roles that he really had a nice little bit in was The Cincinnati Kid, Everett Gene Robinson and Paul Newman, and or not Paul Newman, Steve McQueen. And he was Slade in that. He was also in Coppola's first film, You're a Big Boy Now. But the big four films that he did, okay? The first one is Coming Apart, which was directed by Milton Moses Ginsberg, 1969, and the movie is called Coming Apart, and it's basically Rip Torn going crazy for the whole movie. But there's a film that a lot of people forget, and we're not even getting to the one that Stephen is mentioning. Tropic of Cancer. Steven, have you seen that one, the 1971, where he's Henry Miller?
No, that one Paramount never put out.
Well, let me tell you something. I have seen it. He is fucking amazing. He puts Fred Ward to shame.
I've seen Henry June. That's not saying much.
Okay. I mean, seriously, Rip Torn just absolutely just tears it up. Tears it up. He's so good in this. And so that's one film. Then you get into Maidstone. He was also the main bad guy in the blaxploitation film Slaughter. But the movie that Stephen is mentioning that is one of my favorites is Payday. Payday is a film about this country singer who is, shall we say, bereft of any dignity and any goodness at all. The man is a complete motherfucker. And Rip Torn just tears this movie apart. It is unreal how good he is. And just a real fucking bastard in this. I mean, how else can I say that, Stephen? I can't say it other than that, right?
Well, the poster says this. He says, this man is an alcoholic, misogynistic son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And that's his good part.
Yeah. It's a tremendous film. And I have to also credit the actress Anna Capri, who plays opposite him and is his girlfriend and you know, totally just treats her bad the whole time. It's one of those 70s films that you just know it's going to hell and there's nothing that's going to stop it, and it's one of the most depressing things you've ever seen, but at the end of it you go, holy shit, that was good. And it's an amazing film. And those people who have not seen it, try finding it. Make a supreme effort, because it is well worth it. It is a great film.
Yeah, it's nice how he had his comeback on as Artie Lang.
Yeah, Artie. And let's not forget also one other film that he was in, and that's The Man Who Fell to Earth. And he was Nathan Bryce in that, and he was so good in that too.
His best moment is a moment he's not even on the screen.
Okay.
You're watching David Bowie walk in, and there's this glow around Bowie, and then it just has Rip Torn going, at that moment, I realized he was the most beautiful man I had ever seen in my life.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great film. You know, he also had a featured role in one of Larry Cohen's films.
Oh, that.
Private Files of J. Edgar Hoover. He played Dwight Webb.
Yeah. Oh, he's the one that got the infamous line.
Okay.
Which is, where is the little fairy at tonight?
Yeah. And don't forget, he played Richard M. Nixon in Blind Ambition. I mean, he did so much. And let's not forget, come on, we can't forget this. Rip Torn as Max in the fucking Beastmaster. You know what HBO means, right? Hey, Beastmaster's on.
Beastmaster's on, yeah. And don't forget Songwriter, the movie with Willie Nelson and
wonderful.
Christopherson.
Wonderful.
He's one of the guys, if you see him in the credits, you're going to get a good performance out of him at least.
Yeah, another one is Nadine, which is Jeff Bridges. That's a nice little film. He plays the bad guy in that. But he really did get a nice kick from the Gary Shandling show, and then of course, Men in Black. But
yeah.
Man, he was such a great actor. And by the way, that was one other thing. Are you familiar with a TV series called Ghost Stories?
The one with Sebastian Cabot?
Yeah. Would you believe Rip Torn?
What?
Rip Torn did a series where he was the narrator.
Oh.
And it's called Ghost Stories.
Only Ghost Stories I know was the one that had Sebastian Cabot as the host.
And that was like the 70s. This one is in the 90s. I didn't know anything about it, so I just wanted to know. Okay, so there we go. We've got him going back now. Let's go to another great character actor. And I'm going to kick this over to you, Stephen, and that would be Billy Drago.
Yeah, I'm going to a place you don't expect. His first role in a movie was in Wind Walker. Have either of you ever heard that?
Yes. I've never seen it, but I have heard of it.
It was the first and only movie so far to be filmed in the Cherokee language. And it's good. But just imagine Billy Drago playing a Sioux warrior.
Oh, that would be cool. That'd be cool as hell.
Yeah. Billy Drago talks about how him and the guys were laughing up that these Goombas were playing Indians. And he said it was weird seeing a Sioux Indian, the only Sioux Indian ever with an Italian accent.
Now, of course, you know, the couple of films that I know him from, he had a small role in Pale Rider. He played the deputy. Of course, Invasion USA. Vamp. He was in Vamp. Freeway, too. He was in Freeway, which I love Freeway. But the big thing for him, for me, there are two. The Adventures of Briscoe County, Jr. And he plays John Bly. And he was so good in that. And that's such an underrated, fun little series. And of course, it stars Bruce Campbell, but he played the bad guy, who's looking for this orb, which is from outer space, and it's one of those like, what do they call that? Steampunk.
Yeah.
And he's won on that. He's so much fun in that movie, in that series.
When Briscoe County went under, Bruce and Sam tried to pitch a syndicated series with Drago's character.
Yeah, that would be great. That would have been great. Now, it's a shame that series didn't do well. Now, the other thing I do have to mention before we mention Imprint would be the remake of The Hills Have Eyes. And he plays Papa Jupiter in that.
And
he's actually
out.
Pretty good in that. What?
He's pretty good, but he stands out. Let me say one that you're forgetting. I mean, you have this studio film. You got Brian De Palma directing, Sean Connery, Andy Garcia.
Oh, yeah.
Robert De Niro. You would expect them to take the movie, but no. In just under 20 minutes of screen time, Billy Drago takes the Untouchables and makes it his movie.
Oh, yeah. Agreed. 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 And then, of course, one of the ones that is best known is the Masters of Horror episode called Imp, which Takashi Miike directed, but Showtime balked at it and didn't show it. And then it was released on the DVD set. But that's a hell of a film too.
He's freaking great in that.
Oh, he's fantastic. You know, the thing is, particularly as he grew older, it was like he was from another universe. I mean, it's almost like he wasn't human. And he played with that really well.
Yeah. The nice thing about Imprint is that the first of it, you don't think that Drago's the bad guy. But then by the end of it, it slaps you right in the face that Drago is a son of a bitch in it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. So to move on, I just want to mention a couple of people briefly. But the first one I'm going to give to you, and that would be Artie Johnson.
Artie Johnson started out, his biggest role was in the 60s, was in Laugh-In, and he was freaking hilarious.
Very interesting.
Well, I was thinking more of him and Ruth Buzzy.
Yes. Forget his first name, but his last name was Horny.
Yeah. They played the dirty old man and the woman.
Right.
And when Ruth Buzzy died, he just released a press statement saying, "My wife has died."
Ruth is still living. Ruth is still living.
Has Ruth said anything about his death?
Oh, no, absolutely she has. It's the other way around. When he died, she put out a statement.
Yeah. And he, in Love at First Bite, was the third best Renfield out there after... Number one, of course, is Dwight Frye. And number two being Tom Waits. And then number three is Artie Johnson.
And to be honest, two and three are interchangeable as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I agree.
If you look at the movie itself, it's like George Hamilton, Suntan Guy, is Dracula. You wouldn't think that it would be as good and loving towards Dracula and the mythos as it is.
Oh, it is. I always compare that to Young Frankenstein in terms of that the people behind it had love of the character and of the material. You know, and of course, Mel Brooks came out with Dracula Dead and Loving It, and it's not nearly as good as Love at First Bite. Not even close.
Yeah, Artie Johnson didn't do as much work as the other, but when he did his great work, he was great.
Yeah, Artie, as far as the Renfield character, that he's just, it's just so much fun. And he really, you know, he had a lot of guest spots on TV and that sort of thing. But this is the one role where he really shone. And he was wonderful. And, of course, his work on Lapin is just tremendous. If you don't believe me, go to YouTube and just YouTube his name, and you'll see all sorts of great bits. Okay? Now, a couple other I want to mention in passing. One would be Paul Darrow. And Paul Darrow was an English actor. I know him specifically for one thing and one thing only. And I know he did a lot more than this. But damn it. Blake 7 is one of the great science fiction TV series of all time. And he was just fantastic in it. And that's You know, unfortunately, over here in the States, it may not be as well known. But if you've never seen Blake Seven and you've never seen Paul Darrow as the hero in that, you have got to see Blake Seven.
Blake Seven is pretty much lost.
Well, they better fucking find it, okay?
That's what he said. The story is he went to BBC around the DVD and he was trying to get the rights to the show and just, you know, find it. And then all of a sudden they're like, Blake Seven? Yeah, we don't know where that is. What the fuck talking about?
But he's a wonderful actor. And I had a friend of mine, Russell, who introduced me to two series, and that was one of them. The other one was Star Lost. And I fell in love with Blake Seven.
You gotta punch him for the second one.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as Star Lost, that's one of Russell's things, which is really weird. He just loves the Star Lost and Cypress Corners. What can I tell you? So that's one person we got to mention. I'm going to kick this one over to you because we were talking earlier today. And I said, do you know this person? And you like basically ripped me a new asshole. So why don't you talk about Freddie Jones?
Freddie Jones was definitely in a lot of the Hammer films and in the 60s. His biggest U.S. role was as Stuper Howitt in David Lynch's Dune, and he is amazing in it. If you can get a hold of the 3-hour cut of David Lynch's Dune, it's worth it.
Oh, absolutely. So tell them about the 3-hour cut. What, you know, why it was cut down and what's in it?
Well, what happened is that the original cut that went to theaters was 2 hours long. David Lynch's original fine cut was 5 hours long. And the studio just butchered it. And if you watch the 2-hour cut, Freddie Jones' character, Thufir, vanishes from the fucking movie. You see him for about 2 seconds at the end of it, right, Carl?
Yeah, something like that. Maybe 5 seconds at most.
But that's it. A 3-hour cut has the proper ending for Thufir's character.
Mm-hmm.
And...
yeah,
sadly, it was only put out on a flipper disc in a steelbook set, and the damn thing's out of print, and it's worth around $40 or $50.
Mhm. So one of the things about Freddie Jones too, for our British compatriots, we may not know the show, but he was in the original cast of Emmerdale, and that's been running forever. There's like 632 episodes, and he's been in almost all of them. So, I mean, he's been a working actor. And of course, you mentioned, of course, doing all of the early stuff. He was in The Elephant Man, several of the Hammer films. But just a great actor.
The Fearless Vampire Killers.
Yes. Absolutely. And as I said, The Elephant Man, he was in Crawl. He was Ymir in Crawl. He was
in
Firestarter. Go ahead.
That's one I would love for them to find a 2-hour plus cut of.
Yes, I agree. He was in Young Sherlock Holmes. And so many more things, lots of British TV series, but a great actor and definitely one make a mention of that. I'm going to take the next one, and that would be Max Wright. Max Wright was basically known for Alf. Okay? But he was in so much more. And one of the ones that he was in that a lot of people don't realize was All That Jazz, Bob Fosse's musical from 1979. He had a relatively major role in that. But if you want to see a movie with Max Wright just riffing like crazy, you got to look for a small little film called Simon, which has the great Austin Pendleton and the great Alan Arkin in it. And it's about this think tank that makes Alan Arkin think he's an alien from that. And it is just wild. And Max Wright is just so good at it. But that's what I have to say about Max Wright. Definitely check. Try to find Simon. It's actually on YouTube. You can watch it. It's a great film.
Yeah. And Simon,
do you have anything?
Top 10 list of lost films.
Well, there is that YouTube version. So hey, we got that at least. I saw that in theater, and I just fucking laughed. And I was like one of four people in the fucking theater. And I just love that movie. What's your any thoughts on Max Wright at all?
Oh yeah, he was good. I remember watching him in Alf. He was good, and I actually seen Simon on HBO. There's no way to avoid it in the early 80s.
True. What did you
it
think
just
of Simon?
To me, they should have had a meaner ending for it.
Yeah. I actually would agree with that. Okay. I would agree with
that. Oh, and don't forget he played the cop in Where's Papa? Or was he the brother who...
No, he was the brother.
Yeah. He was the brother who was forced to orally service a cop in Where's Papa, and then the policeman ended up falling in love with him. And don't they end up as a couple?
Yes. Okay. Well, the next one I got to talk about is an Italian actress by the name of Valentina Cortez, and she was in several of Fellini films. She also was in Juliet of the Spirits, but the one film that everyone would know her from here in the States, well, she also was in Brother, Son, Sister, Moon, Day for Night, the Jesus of Nazareth miniseries. She also worked with Franco Zeffirelli, who just passed away. But the one film that you would know her from, she was Queen Ariadne in The Adventures of Baron Munchausen. The Queen with the Detachable Head, along with Robin Williams, or Rex Tutte, as he's credited in the film. But you've seen Adventures of Baron Munchausen, correct?
Left or right?
What, Stephen?
Left or right?
Oh, right.
Okay, I just want to know which way to slap you from.
Pardon me.
And the reason that Carl's passing over Zeffirelli is that pretty much Carl's talked about two of his big three already by just mentioning her name.
Yeah, absolutely.
Julia
so
the Spirit, Jesus of Nazareth, and, of course, Romeo and Juliet.
Right. Right. And Zeffirelli also was well known as a opera director, not just film, a theater director. But the thing about Zeffirelli, it was like, you know, if it's a Zeffirelli production, it's big, it's bombastic, it's wonderful. But Valentina Cortez, the Adventures of Baron Munchausen, she's just so wonderful in that role. And you could tell her that she's having a blast. She's just having such a great time. And she, that was one of the last films she did. You know, that was 1988, and then she retired in 1993. She was 93 years old when she passed away. So she had a long, wonderful career. And we definitely want to say something about her. Now, I'm going to kick this next one over to you, Stephen. And that would be Ben Barinholtz.
Yeah. Well, Ben Barinholtz was a cinephile in New York in the 80s. And he started out just programming odd little movies at midnight there. But in 1970, he was basically head of programming at the Elgin Theater. And he was, well, the long story, he was showing films for John Lennon. And John Lennon had this film he wanted him to show, and thus El Topo in the Midnight Movie was born. And what was the theater he moved at after the Elgin?
I don't know. I'd have
to
check.
Big one. The second big one when it comes to midnight.
Oh, that would be the Waverly.
Yeah, he moved from the Elgin over to the Waverly. So because of him, we got the Midnight Movie moment. He was the one who was pushing El Topo. He's the one that gave The Harder They Come. He was the producer of Eraserhead.
Oh. And then later in his career, he produced the Coen films.
Including Blood Simple, he co-produced.
Yeah.
So the man had a major, major effect. You may not know the name, but trust me,
you know the work.
You know the work. No question about that. No question about that. So there's one other person I want to mention tonight. And this one is a little odd for someone who doesn't really know the background. And we've been talking about entertainment people. But I need to mention a sports person who passed away for various reasons. And that would be Jim Boughton. Jim Boughton was a pitcher for the Yankees, and then he was traded to the expansion Seattle Pilots in 1969. And basically he wrote a book called Ball 4 about that season. And he also wrote about all the drug use, all the bad language, and that sort of thing. So his book was very, very much like Peter Gent's book, which came out about a year later, called North Dallas 40. So Jim Boughton basically threw his career to the fire in baseball. And he kicked around for a while. He was making enough money from the book. And all of a sudden, he gets a call, because he had been on an L.A. talk show. He gets a call from Robert Altman. And Robert Altman says, come in for a screen test. I think I have a role for you. And so he came in for the screen test, and he was cast in a little movie, which is my all-time favorite movie of all time. And yes, I'll say all time twice in this case. And that would be The Long Goodbye. And he plays Terry Lennox. He only has two scenes, one at the beginning and one at the end of the movie. But oh my God, what a set piece on either side. Just incredible.
Oh.
Yes?
Who gives a shit?
Yeah, Marlo. You know, you're just a loser. You even I even lost my fucking cat. Bang. Yeah. Brilliant. And you know what? So the next year, TV decides, ooh, he's a hot property. We're going to make a TV series of Ball 4. Think about that for a second. How gutted was that on TV? It only lasted like 2 episodes, I think.
I couldn't see them doing that book until HBO.
Yeah. Yeah. They tried it on network. It was an absolute fucking disaster. No.
I think
but
the closest we came to a movie about Ball 4 probably be Bull Durham.
Bull Durham is a lot nicer than Ball 4.
I said as close as.
You know. Well, let's put it this way. The closest thing you have to Ball 4 is North Dallas 40. They have the same attitude.
Yeah.
They have the same fucking attitude toward the game, toward the drug use, toward the ownership. It's very, very much the same attitude. So the closest thing you have to Ball 4, the book, is, in the movie form, is North Dallas 40. But Jim Bouton, I will say this. He is an excellent Terry Lennox. And he's a sleazy son of a bitch. And it's really, really good. And for that alone, I have to give my remembrances for Jim Bouton.
If you want to find another role that's got such a little amount of short screen time, but with the same amount of impact, you're going to have to go back to fucking Orson Welles and The Fourth Man.
The third man, not the fourth man.
Third man, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, Harry Lime.
Because he's only in the movie for 10 minutes.
Yeah. Like 5 minutes at the beginning and 5 minutes at the end.
Yeah.
You know, but it's his disappearance. It's his. He is the linchpin of the whole movie.
Yeah.
And it's a brilliant role, and Altman just like always looked at people and got the right thing. And don't forget that he wasn't the only newbie in that. Nina Van Pallant had never acted before. And she was cast in that film, too. And she's perfect in that film. Of course, they're working with one of the best people. So,
and don't forget about that guy who was, like, ripping his clothes off to be naked in the movie.
Yes, that would be true. And of course, that's Arnold Schwarzenegger. but we've actually done a watch of that. So,
yeah.
Again, if you have not seen The Long Goodbye, you need to make an effort, and you need to just see how good Jim Bouton was in that.
If you're there, do me a favor, look up Django and find out who plays the colonel and then tell me.
Okay. But the other thing too is I actually saw him pitch. For the Pilots that year. They were an expansion team and they were in the NL. And they played the Pittsburgh Pirates and I got to see him pitch. So that's kind of cool too. So there we go. That's what I've got. We're waiting for Doc to find. Why did you want to find out who this actor was?
You'll see once he finds him. But this year, more than any, I'm starting to feel awful damned old.
You're feeling old? What do you think I feel like? I'm older than you.
Yeah.
All right.
You know what I mean.
Okay, Jose Bordalo, is General Hugo Rodriguez.
Yeah, Jose Bordalo. He played the colonel in Django, the main bad guy, and was in over 100 Italian films and was in my favorite Mario Bava film, Lisa and the Devil.
Oh, cool. Oh. Okay, well, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one I missed. That's one I missed. Anyone else that you can
see? Lisa and the Devil, you need to. Just for every improvisation that Telly Savalas does in that movie.
Oh, he's wonderful in that film. He's wonderful for that. Well, anyway, we just wanted to spend some time tonight in, you know, taking a look at all these recent people who we've lost. And even though they're gone from us, the films and everything they've done are there for us to look at and remember them by. And as always, I want to thank Doc for producing. Now, Stephen, you've got Wildside Radio. What do you have planned? What's going on?
Wildside, well, tomorrow night I'm doing a special secret film that deals with, it's a mid-60s film that deals with the political issues of how the South still hates the Northerners, how both sides sees they're ignorant. And Sunday.
Ooh, sounds like you and me.
And Sunday we're going to have Vicky Loves Sci-Fi. And on Monday we're going to have Rosemarie Macario as she talks about her upcoming book launch party.
Oh, nice. Tell her I said hello.
Okay.
Tell her I said hello.
And we're going to, and I don't know what about next Saturday. Before Labor Day, darn it, Doc, we need to get together and do a drive-in monster movie.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Oh, by the way, you forgot something on Tuesday, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, Tuesday we're going to talk about, I usually have this rule like the year doesn't end, begin the 70s or something, don't begin until the second year. But we're going to be talking about, as part of my self-tribute and celebration to Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is coming out on the 26th, we're going to be talking about, and Carl picked this out and it's a beautiful name, it's 1969, the year the rules were broke.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll be guesting on Wildside Radio on Tuesday. We're going to do that at 8 o'clock, aren't we, Stephen?
Yeah.
And we're going to do that at 8 o'clock, and we'll be talking about the films of 1969. So I want to thank Stephen for doing that. Doc, what do you have planned on Sunday on the Legion?
Actually, I don't have anything planned. I will be at a baby shower over near Glimmerglass State Park, which is south of Cooperstown, until the evening on Sunday. Then I'll be driving about three and a half hours home.
Oh,
so
you're taking Sunday off, and that's a good thing. You need to do that once in a while.
Well,
okay.
I have a little something I'm going to work on though as a placeholder. It's not going to be like a big show, but I have some stuff I do want to talk about that I will record and get out there.
Okay.
For Sunday.
And next week. Okay. So Chrissy is still working on her series. That's going to start in another week or so, and that's going to be a history of LGBTQ film using Vito Russo's book as a template, and that's, of course, a celluloid closet. And by the way, it is Vito Russo's birthday today. Happy birthday, Vito, up in heaven, wherever you are. And So he's going to be doing that. But next week, we talk about all the people that died, but there's something else that's dying on its last breath that we have not talked about. And that would be Mad Magazine. So next Friday is going to be a whole show on the legacy of Mad Magazine. And I was going to actually add that into this show tonight, but I decided it was too big. It needs its own show.
Yeah, it definitely is too big.
So next week we're going to be doing the legacy of Mad Magazine. So that's what we're going to do on the pattern next week. So.
And I've only got one thing to say about that show, Carl.
Okay, go ahead.
Forza me!
Yeah, we're going to be talking about all the wonderful cartoonists, all the satire, all the everything about that magazine that made it special. And it's a very, very special magazine, and it's something I grew up with, and that definitely had an influence on my viewpoint, my worldview, and my sense of humor. So that's what we're going to do next Friday. Again, I want to thank Stephen for coming and joining us. Thank you very much, Stephen. And, of course, as always, Doc, you are the producer extraordinaire. And to end up, I thought we would do something special for all those people that have passed away that we talked about today. They're all my friends, and they all have died. We're gonna go out with the Jim Carroll anthem here. So for everyone, thanks for listening. Again, thank you, Stephen. Thank you, Doc, and say good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Well, good night, everybody. And we appreciate you listening.